Oh, what's the best way to do this?
With feeling.
Brilliant.
You've been watching Fame, haven't you?
Always.
Fame is pretty dark, isn't it?
It's. Are you thinking of what's the other one?
The film, the actual film.
Yeah, no, I mean, what's the other film that is much like Fame but not quite?
Showgirls.
Footloose.
Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this week's episode is the irreplaceable Peter Willington.
Yo, what up?
And the irremovable Keith Andrew.
Have you tried?
You have indelible written down the side of you, which I should have paid attention to before I smeared you all over my desk. And now I can't get you off. It's terrible. I've tried White Spirit
lots of people have trouble getting me off, but, you know.
I really did.
We're not even 60 seconds.
Telegraph that one. I set him up for that. That was my bad. I apologize, listeners. This is the tone we have set at the beginning, and it's only going to go downhill.
This is what they're here for. Don't apologize. This is the only reason people listen.
This is the podcast equivalent of the Bravo channel. Is that what you're saying? Does Bravo still exist?
First of all, the way that you're saying it is weird. Stop saying Bravo. Is it like
what should I say? Bravo.
It's not bra. Like you're putting too many A's in there. It's just one A. It's Bravo. It's not Bravo. You sound like you've never watched Bravo for a cheeky 10 minutes of. Like you haven't.
Is that what it is? I thought Bravo with Bravo was more like a cheeky 10 minutes of.
No, it's like reading Loaded magazine. It's like you flick through it and it's like,
that's what I said.
It's like, well, you read it and it's like, oh, that looks interesting, and then like it's just smut and adverts for the rest of it.
I thought it just was just smut and adverts without that interesting bit.
Didn't they show Takeshi's Castle at one point?
I think Bravo just used to be. Repeat Central. You know, it used to be all those kind of shows from the 70s and 80s that weren't on anymore, and then all other kinds of smut later on, I thought.
Is that what Dave's doing now, without the smut, I suppose?
No, Dave is just all the stuff that used to be on the BBC years ago and other stuff. All those channels are just the recycled Beeb stuff, aren't they? But
yeah.
It's because they own a share of it, but, you know, that's not really very interesting for...
Don't take it political. We were talking about smut. Don't get all serious on us.
Sorry.
Boobs.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm bringing it. Bringing it back. In fact, Dragon's Crown was out this week, which we'll talk about. And unfortunately, that subject's going to come up, isn't it?
It sure is.
Because the game's supposed to be brilliant, but looks a bit weird. Anyhow, what else is going to be coming up? Well, we're going to be talking about Take-Two, the guys behind XCOM, Enemy Unknown. They reckon they've cracked the iOS premium market for the first time. Do we believe them? We will have a discussion. There's a new Sumogo game, the guys behind Beat Sneak Bandit and Yearwalk. They've got a new game coming out. It looks a bit weird. We're going to discuss it. And there's some exciting new stuff upcoming for the 3DS and Vita in the next few months. We're going to list it all out for you in the news. But first, it's the update. Good news, Keith Andrew. Kingdom Rush Frontiers is being updated.
It is.
It is. Well, actually, it might have already been updated by the time you listen to this. They say later in the week, but we're already late in the week, so I reckon it'll be out now. You're going to get some new levels, a couple of new villains, and heroes as well. Heroes are called Katsau and Karkinos. Apparently, Karkinos is a big growling sea turtle with a cannon on his shoulder, obviously. And Katsau is a kung fu monk who can change into a bunch of different creatures. So he sounds a bit like Bravestar.
Bravestar?
Didn't Bravestar turn into a bunch of different creatures? Oh, no, he just invoked the power of creatures, didn't he?
What? Do you mean Bravestar, the one where he...
Sheriff,
there was
where he calls...
Cowboys on Mars?
Yeah, but that's like... Doesn't he have, like, eyes of the bear and you know, arse of the cheetah and all that stuff, no?
Does he? No, I thought that was... Wasn't that Mosk from Defenders of the Earth?
No, it was totally Bravestar. He blatantly, invokes powers, like, you know, testicles of the panther. and you know, shroom, something happens and he gets big testicles. I don't know. I think that's right. Anyway, but run with me on this.
It's a real surprise that was a children's cartoon.
Well, you know, they were quite. It's a liberal time, the 80s. You know, Thatcher, she let anything go through. There are some new levels for this as well. They haven't told us a great deal about it, but you can see a trailer for it on the site. It's called Rising Tides, and yeah, lots more stuff. Kingdom Rush players to look forward to. All free, naturally, on iOS. We brought you news that Temple Run 2 had been updated with some bonus characters. Character models that were actually from the previous game, so wasn't really all that new. There's an actual new character that's just been introduced. Alright, I'll just say it. So, you can now play as Usain Bolt.
Usain? Is that what we're saying now? Is it?
I thought it was Usain Bolt.
I think it's just
is it Usain Bolt?
Usain, isn't it? Usain.
Usain, Isain, Wheelsain, Bolt. You can.
This is the pedantic podcast where we pull you up every few seconds on how you've mispronounced things.
It could have been finished by now.
Yeah, but exactly, I'm leaving. Yeah, so you can play as Usain Bolt.
Let's call him Bolt. Two.
Bolty. Which, I mean, apart from the fact that he's a runner and it's Temple Run, so there's your link up, right? So I get that. But look at a screenshot of it. It's Usain Bolt in his Olympic garb charging down the middle of what looks like, you know, something off an Indiana Jones set. It looks ridiculous.
This is what the Olympic Park looked like before they finished it. So
these are
shots of him training before they'd built.
Oh, they should have kept it. I would have watched much more of the Olympics if there was a gigantic chainsaw sticking out the side of a stone tunnel. I would have totally watched that.
I have a quick question for you. Where does the love of Usain Bolt come from?
He's very fast.
Okay, he is fast. Sure.
Faster than me and you.
But there are you say that, but you know, you've never seen me run against him. So, but there have been lots of athletes who are very, very good at their sports, right? Like, very good. And I know this guy's maybe a slight exception because he's incredible. But
he's very fast, Peter.
But is it because he's eccentric?
Is he eccentric? I have literally no idea what his personality is.
No, he's not. To be honest, in a normal world, he's not very interesting at all. But in a world of sprinters who usually have the brain of a size of a pea and don't say much at all and just garble off the same old, yeah, I've been training really hard, blah, 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 yeah, yeah. Or if they're British, yeah, coming seventh was great, yeah. He has what people call a personality. And he kind of goes beyond that, and he's a bit of a showman and does things beyond the track where he goes to events, he does charity stuff.
And appears in computer games.
Exactly, yeah. So they also like the fact that he, a lot of the time, when he in between major competitions, he lets himself go quite a lot and loses and then comes back for the big ones and just races away with it. So there's kind of always a slight edge when he races as to, is he on form or is this when he's on his holidays and he's...
Plus, you know, plus, his name is Usain Bolt, and Bolt sounds like fast, and so it's like he's called Usain Fast, and he's quite fast, Peter. Did I mention he's quite fast?
He is quite fast. I think I could beat him in a race, though.
Okay, well, when you get your character model put into Temple Run 2, we'll race them against one another, and we'll see once and for all.
As fellow podcaster not here, John pointed out today, he runs for 10 seconds. Really, what you need here is a long-distance runner because after about 20 seconds. He would be on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, they should have got old, what's his name? Old Mo to do it.
Mo Farah. Farah, is that right? Yeah. Yes, you're quite right. Well, we've categorically debunked this update then. Well done, Imanji. Yeah, nice one.
He's also working on his own one.
Oh, is he? Oh, he's got his own running app. Oh, I've seen a few of those.
He told us in our exclusive Beers interview.
Which you can see right now live on Beers.com.
There's an endless runner, a Usain Bolt endless runner coming in the future.
Wowzers. Well, we can all look forward to that then. In the meantime, you can play him in Temple Run 2 if you really must. Very quickly, Tiny Thief, which is sort of an adventure point-and-click puzzler thing, which I'm going to talk about towards the end of the podcast because I've been playing it. Has been reduced in price. It's usually £1.99 or $2.99, and it's down to 69p 99 cents at the moment, which I would suggest you probably get, especially at that price. But I'll explain why later. Another price drop, last thing, is XCOM Enemy Unknown. Now, obviously, it caused a bit of a wave when it first came out because it cost £13.99 or $20. But it is a port of a game that came from the PC. It's a very modern level port. But it's been reduced, so you can now pick it up for the extremely cheap and reasonable price of £10.49 or $14.99.
Bargain.
It's a bargain. People are all like, 69p? Oh, no. Oh, damn. So, no, technically 25% off. So that's pretty good.
The interesting thing here, though, is that 2K can do some interesting stuff with its pricing structure. I don't know why I've even started this sentence. This is going in towards like businessy territory for me, and I don't usually like that kind of thing. But
it's actually going right into our next section.
What
section's that, Peter?
Well, this is the section where we do
just say news.
The news. Good. I'm glad that we're in the news now. So the thing that I think is interesting about this is that 2K can now start playing with this idea that, you know, if you build something and you sell it for, you know, let's say $20, a certain number of people will buy it, but it locks out another audience. By bringing it down by a few dollars every single time, they can start to see where that real sweet spot is because, you know, ultimately, XCOM Enemy Unknown has a brand. It has it has that cachet. It's already had a big successful PC release, and it's a classic franchise from yesteryear. But now they can start playing because they started so high. They can start sort of going, oh well, if we put it on sale for $15, how many more people do we get? And if we put it on sale for $5, how many more people do we get? And I think that is quite cool, like, thing. Like, we haven't had an opportunity like this for a while because everyone just goes, yeah, pay me $1.99 for it. Oh, and now pay me 69p for it. And there's no experimentation.
Well, we've been talking about it a bit this week because the Take-Two CEO, Strauss Zelnick, he was obviously one of the guys putting XCOM Enemy Unknown onto iOS. And as I say, we discussed it before, and it was comparatively expensive, and it was a big test. It was kind of a shot in the dark to see, will it stick? Will people buy it? Will it completely flop? And if it works, what else is going to come over? He has deemed the launch a success and apparently, quote, illustrates that consumers are willing to pay a premium price for premium entertainment.
So if that's the case, why have they dropped the price?
Whenever they launch a new game, then no matter what it is, no matter how successful it is, it always gets a price drop for a week and then pops back up every month or two. That's what always happens.
I think this kind of stance from people like 2K is born from a reluctance to accept that you can get free games. And they're desperate for evidence like this that they don't have to go that way because they're scared of going that way. And I don't think they can draw any conclusions from, you know, it's only been out, 2 weeks or whatever. I don't think they can draw
2 weeks. It's been out for about 2-3 months.
What, this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think they can draw any conclusions yet, especially if they've just dropped the price. And also the problem that they have, well, not a problem, but the advantage it has is that it's people saying it's an established brand that people know of. If Take-Two had launched, you know, some random new franchise at this price that had no connection whatsoever to any other franchise that people knew, how would that have done at $20? Probably not very well.
That's really, really interesting. And, you know, they hinted at in our interview with them that they were going to be bringing Civilization 5, yes. Right? So
if it proved profitable.
Yeah, exactly. So this has obviously done well enough for them. So they're clearly considering like Civilization 5, right? So if they bring that over and they release it at $20 and that still does well for them, then, yeah, they've got more of an argument to say that, heck yes, this kind of thing works.
There's only so long they can continue to bring over games already released on other systems and launch them on iOS. At some point, if they're serious about mobile, they have to create new stuff.
I suppose in the very long term, absolutely. Like that isn't a great business model, even though you could theoretically leverage those brands into new titles. But, you know, companies like Square Enix get away with it all the time with Final Fantasy. You know, we've talked about that before.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but what I mean is this headline is being held up as an example of, look, see, you can. You don't have to go free. When, you know, 99% of developers out there trying to make money on mobile don't have a PC game or a console game they can bring over that everyone loves already. You know, this is a very specific example of where a game can sell at $20. It's a game that's already out and everyone's played and blah, blah, blah. It's not going to work if you're launching a new game, and if you're not Take Two, and if you're not, you know, so trying to for him to say, look, you can do it. Well, you can in that specific circumstance, yeah.
But isn't the good thing about iOS is that people have always said that you can set price points. There's an imaginary 69p price point that's been created by, you know, over a period of years of people deciding that's what's right. But everyone charges something different, and it depends on the quality and the length and the size and the popularity of the game. So the nice thing about it is that you can get a game for free, or you can get a game for a quid, or you can get a game for 15 quid. And they all have their own place if, you know, the content is suitable for the price.
But I don't think this is necessarily bad that 69p is the dominant one, because if as long as you're making a game that feels like it should be 69p, and I don't mean rubbish, but I mean as in broken up in stages, that it feels like a chunk of gaming rather than a mass of gaming, if you know what I mean, and that's perfect for mobile anyway, then I think that's fine. I'm generally not keen on people just bringing over games that already exist that were made for other systems. For I can understand, like I you know, the moment Broken Sword came over to iOS, I bought it like a shot. It's lucky in that point and clicks kind of actually work.
Yeah,
almost
it
as
works
well
for strategy in point and click. Yeah.
If Sega said, right, we're bringing over Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2 to iOS, and we're going to charge 40 quid for each, I would be on that. But I'm a very very and I even
sad man.
Even if it played like a, you know, a bitch, I'd still have bought them. But in general, the other part of my brain, which wasn't an obsessive fanboy, would say, well, this is a bit crap, isn't it? Because they're just taking this game that wasn't made for mobile and they've kind of just shoved it on here. You know, we were talking about Halo last week, a game that, you know, Microsoft could quite easily have said, right, someone convert the first four Halos and make them work on a touchscreen, and we'll sell them for $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, whatever. And then they would have guaranteed to have sold a certain amount because it's got Halo attached to it. But what they did was went away and said, right, we need to do something that actually works on touchscreen, something that is a unique experience that is designed for this medium. And I think it's the fighting against the dying of the light, this kind of thing from Take-Two, where they want to be on mobile because they know that's where the money is, but what are they doing? They're bringing over stuff that they don't really have to think about.
I think they're well positioned to do it, though. If you are going to bring over Halo or something, then clearly it's going to be a massively diluted, kind of weak experience to have the FPS controls. They can do it because they do strategy games, and strategy games do genuinely work well, sometimes even a little bit better on touchscreens because of the naturalistic, you know, nature of the interface. So they can do it, and I don't really feel like it's a cop-out. It's the sensible thing to do. If they made a watered-down mobile version of XCOM, it wouldn't make sense because they've already got the full game sitting there and it's perfect for iOS.
But all I'm saying is that, well, I'm saying two things. In that, I think this is a very unique, like I say, unique case of when you can sell a game for that amount.
Sure.
Although it applies to 90% of people. And also, just
no,
in general, I get a bit offended as a mobile gamer that this is a strategy that people have adopted, because I don't think it really treats mobile with much respect.
Well, it's going to remain this way for a while, but ultimately, when all of these devices converge, you know, when you're using your iPad to plug into your television and you use it as your home console and that sort of thing, I think at that point, that's when you start seeing this idea of $15, $20 games come back again. Like right now, I think one of the big issues with it is, like, as Keith said, like, it isn't, you know, $20, you get a very big mammoth experience, and it's an experience that you sit down and you play on a train for a few hours or a flight or at home or whatever, and that experience is rare. But ultimately, you know, when we're starting to play, you know, Real Racing 12 or whatever it is on our HD TVs because we've plugged in our iPads, you know, this figure could very easily come back. You know, we could very easily go back to this, like, traditional console price.
We'll be paying in galactic credits by then.
Do you reckon we'll be in virtual reality by that point? Do you reckon, like,
maybe we already are?
No!
I just broke everyone's brain and I just saw the Matrix. Oh my god! Well, Jake Solomon, the guy who was the lead designer for XCOM, talking about whether they're going to bring Civilization 5, for example, over. When I talked to him, he said, you know, it depends on how many people respond to what they're doing. And if 2K believe it, they've responded well, then we may well see it upcoming sometime in the future. That said, other iOS games that 2K have done, things like Haunted Hollow and Sid Meier's Ace Patrol, which I reviewed recently, they are free-to-play, so they are still dabbling in those waters. But going from console ports to games designed purely for the beloved iOS systems, Device 6 is a game that I'm excited about because it's by Samogo, the guys you mentioned earlier, behind Year Walk. and beat Sneak Bandit. Their new game is going to be a what's described as a surreal text adventure thriller. There's a video for it up on the site. It, to be honest, is kind of cryptic and doesn't reveal a great deal. It's a lot of flashing imagery and some photos which appear to be zooming in or out, and some spinny text boxes, and it all looks a little bit weird.
It looks like one of those puzzles in Assassin's Creed 2. You have to match up pictures.
I suppose,
or...
yes, it does it like the Animus is scooching along in the background a little bit, yeah. Mm. But to be honest, having played through Year Walk, which I really, really enjoyed, their creepy kind of adventure first-person thing, that had a whole text component to it, where there's a diary of a dude who's keeping information about the adventure that you're having, and you could flick through it and you could see pictures and images and all the stuff, and there were puzzles contained therein. So this isn't such a great leap for them to dive straight into a kind of text-oriented adventure. The thing I liked about it is it was described by Simon Flesser, the guy behind it, one of the guys in the team, as apparently Franz Kafka meets Agatha Christie, Keith, David Cronenberg's Scanners, which has got me very excited, and spy and agent-themed movies from the 60s, like The Prisoner.
Certainly sounds interesting.
Yeah, so the way I see it is it's going to have pensioner private investigators whose heads explode when people stare at them for too long.
You've also got to shout the name because it's in capitals. So.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you have to do that. And the game's name itself, it has to be Device 6!
Device 6!
There you go. I'm very excited for this because I really liked Year Walk. I thought it was great and groovy, if a bit short. These guys have a nice sense of atmosphere, and I'm all about the atmosphere. Did you play Year Walk, Peter, or was it in your scary list?
It was in my scary list.
It's not that scary.
It's
a bit scary.
I downloaded Home the other day. I still haven't given that a shot. I'm a little bit worried about it. Mm. I know. I really want to play both of their earlier games.
These guys are good. These guys I hold up as like these are people doing something interesting with iOS.
Do you know these guys? The games that they've put out, they seem like the kind of games that I will download just before I head back to my family home for Christmas, and I'll just sit there and ignore the rest of my family and play them. They seem like those kind of like. Mentally stimulating, wow kind of games that I don't really want when I'm working.
That you like to use to ignore your loved ones.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, look how cool this is. And like, oh, I'm learning. I'm learning about life
lessons about donkeys in suits. And
oh, the bottom. Human experience. Wow. Yeah. I am sick, though, of capitalized names. Can we stop this?
Yeah, I know.
I really hate it. I really hate it.
Well, I get around it, actually, by in the apps by reviews, I just capitalize everything. A, because it's easier to read in a small image, and that's what you need. But everything gets treated the same. It's all capitals, no matter what.
I'm just going to write all of my articles in capitals.
Yes, you should. Caps lock for the win. Well, no, just because I don't like remedials. I don't like it when people, everything's normal text, and then suddenly something comes out and it's... Mm. Block capitals, because the idea is obviously it's a callous attempt to stand out generally.
Unless it's an acronym, then I don't think it should be. Isn't
if it's an acronym.
Should we promise to one another now that whenever this sort of thing comes up again, we just shout the name
that's
of it?
Generally, what we do.
I think we should be anyway. Mentally, that's that's what I've been prepared for. I was surprised that James didn't shout when this came up.
All right, I'm sorry. Well, in that case, Device 6 will be coming out later this year. 2013, they say. No specific dates, but keep your eyes peeled for that one. It'll probably, if previous form is anything to go by, be good. Exciting stuff. Now, moving away from iOS, I want to talk about the 3DS and the PS Vita, specifically stuff that's coming out over the next month. We've got a big old list of things that are appearing, and a couple of them are kind of interesting. A couple of them aren't, although I have to say, having skipped through it, Disney's Planes is coming out. You know, the spiritual successor to Cars, I suppose. They've got a movie called Planes coming out. Yeah. It's got planes in it.
Toasters.
And they probably, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's coming out on the 3DS next month. And you're going to fly planes with mouths? Lot to look forward to there.
I don't know what kind of planes you get into, but they all have mouths as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, really?
It's like Thomas the Tank Engine with trains. They're all...
It's like Jimbo Jones, isn't it?
Jimbo Jones? You mean Jimbo Jet Set?
Is that what it's called?
You think so.
Jimbo Jet Set. It's like a fat little podgy...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like,
yellow.
And he's got glass. Yeah, and he's got glasses on.
Oh.
I thought, what a dweeb.
I don't want to be in a plane that has, like, bad eyesight. That sounds very dangerous.
Oh, guys, I can't see where I'm going, but it's okay. And it's, like, ironic as well, because to be in the RAF, you got to have, like, 20/20 vision. But this, like, Jet Set Jones, or whatever he's called. What's his name again?
I don't know. Or
I like those. Do you know what? I like those barges. Anyway, go on.
Will do. Other things that don't really feature my radar that much. Phineas and Ferb, The Quest for Cool Stuff. Is coming to 3DS next month. I'm getting the kind of less interesting ones out of the way, if you've noticed. But slightly more interesting, Mario and Luigi Dream Team. Now, I know that that came out and you reviewed it, didn't you, Peter?
Yes.
Yes, but it's coming out in the US for you American listeners. It's coming out on August 11th. And you quite liked it, didn't you, Peter?
I think you should buy that, American listeners.
Disney Infinity. Now, then. That's coming to 3DS on August the 18th. In the US, and over here, European guys get it on August the 20th. This is of note because it's not just coming to 3DS, it's probably coming to Vita as well, and every other console under the sun, because this is Disney's take on the whole Skylanders thing. So Skylanders did it. It's Activision is Skylanders, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It was their bright idea to go, let's sell physical plastic toys along with the games, and then kids will buy loads and loads and loads of stuff, and it's just a constant revenue stream from badgered parents. Mm-hmm. And then Rovio turned around and went, oh, Angry Birds Star Wars 2, that's going to have portals and little plastic things you can buy, and so that's brilliant. And this is Disney's take on it. Now, of course, Disney have the ability to make plastic toys of all of their Disney characters, all of their Pixar characters, and now all of the Star Wars characters as well.
Well, I was going to say, from this promo shot we've got here, they're almost all, apart from Captain Jack,
Pixar
characters.
Yeah.
I can't see anyone Disney on there at all.
They'll start with the classics, I would imagine, because Pixar's more relevant to kids nowadays. They're not going to have a Sleeping Beauty in there, because kids don't care about that now.
Yeah, and what's the gameplay? Like, all the later Disney movies that are Pixar movies.
It's the gameplay. It's basically kind of a date rape simulator, isn't it?
Okay. Well, it is.
It's Sleeping Beauty. It's that whole, like, you know, you stagger up to her, you give her drugs, she falls asleep.
Right.
And you lock her in a glass box and look at her.
I don't think anyone had sex with her in that movie, unless you've seen some kind of director's cut.
There was an undertone of sexual threat in my version, all right.
So all the later movies are all, like, action-packed, right? So what other movies could they go back to?
Disney did Tangled, didn't they? That was Disney rather
yeah,
than...
They, yeah, yeah.
And that was popular too.
Was it?
For the wee ones. It was
for the wee ones.
It did very well. I wanted to see that.
I mean, what classic ones? What classic... Disney movies.
Alice in Wonderland, they can do that. That's still sort of relevant because they had the new Alice that Tim Burton did, so kids know about it.
You could do a trippy Fantasia, which is quite trippy anyway. You could.
Oh my god! And the best one would be 101 Dalmatians, because there'd be like 101 little Dalmatians to buy.
They're all slightly different spotting patterns.
And they're all slightly different, and you can get what's her name as well? That Cruella
DeVille.
Is that yeah, I got it right. Awesome.
She scared me.
Did she?
She was a bit scary.
A scary movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to cry at all Disney movies. They were all very sad.
But why?
Because they always had a sad part. It's like Lady and the Tramp used to make me cry as well. And you get,
Which bit?
Where he gets accused of, it's the spider coming down to do something to the baby, and he barks at it to chase it away, and they think that he's bitten the baby or something, and then he gets kicked out, and he's on the street, and they're all very sad Disney movies.
I don't
sound like you're hanging up.
That much.
I do. I like all of, like, Mary Poppins make me cry.
But Mary
all
Poppins
these Disney movies make me cry. They're all sad.
You guys are wimps.
But I say again,
shut up, Mister. I won't play The Walking Dead.
Why have they not done a Herbie Racer or an Herbie Endless Runner or Driver or something? Like,
no one gives a crap about Herbie.
Yeah, no one cares about Herbie, dude.
I didn't even like Herbie at the time. In fact, Herbie creeped me out a little bit. I was always more worried about robots and things like that, like Terminator and RoboCop. And yeah, Terminator. Well, you know, he's a machine who is alive, right? That always struck me as a little bit more sinister and scary, because machines are difficult to reason with, and, you know, ridiculous strength and things like that crush you with a grasp.
No, he was scared of motorways. He was a very timid being. He wouldn't go on the freeway. You go up the slip road and you'd get scared and have to reverse down. So
plus he had psychological issues.
Well, he almost killed himself in the first movie. Yeah,
exactly. So he's a troubled machine.
This would not make for a good video game.
Yes, it would.
No, it wouldn't.
The car shivering and weeping in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. A psychological, like, examination of a car. Like, that's not...
Do it as a survival horror. I'd be up for that.
If it... Herbie
goes to hell.
Yes! That would be amazing. Can we register that idea?
We're registering that. Herbie goes to hell. A small Volkswagen Beetle goes through the seven circles of Dante's Inferno.
Oh, that'd be so good.
While talking to a therapist about his abandonment issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one's buying that. Anyway, Disney Infinity. It's coming out in August, and it's going to cost a bloody fortune. So that's about the summary you're going to get if you're a parent. Get ready to buy all the figures under the sun. Other things, very quickly. Etrian Odyssey 4, Legends of the Titan. I haven't played any of these. And one of these Atlas really RPGs, really right?
Really good score. Yeah, Matt, Dina loved it, so...
Spanky. And more Japanese stuff. Harvest Moon, A New Beginning is coming as well. That's end of the month, and I imagine you're looking forward to that one, Peter.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Dragon's Crown a bit later. That's coming to PSV to August the 6th, but we've got the review up right now! Because it's out in Europe at the moment. US guys get it August the 6th, so it's very exciting. Again, that's PS Vita. And the other one that really, you know, floats my boat on this particular list is Rayman Legends. Is coming to PS Vita on August the 30th in Europe and September the 3rd in the US. And the Rayman Origins was brilliant, and I want the sequel ASAP. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Right. Is it out on Wii yet?
No, it's... No,
is it still not out?
No, they
the launch title. It was supposed to be a launch title.
They decided to hold all of the versions back. Yeah, to coincide with the Wii U.
Well, good, because otherwise the Wii U would have totally flopped, wouldn't it? That would have been awful.
It's doing really well at the moment.
Imagine that, yeah.
But by the time it comes out, I don't think you'll be able to buy a Wii U, to be honest.
No, Asda's pulled them, and... is it Asda that did it?
Yeah.
And that, does that mean that Walmart's pulled them as well?
So, no, I think it's just UK, but...
Okay.
So to, like, peer through the press curtain for the listener just very quickly, I received an email today from a press source, and it said something along the lines of Pikmin 3 is out today, kicking off a year, or something like that, of one incredible Nintendo release every month. But it never actually mentioned what the other games were, and I was like, I don't think that's true at all. Mm. Like, because there was talk at one point, very, very briefly at PG, that we were potentially going to look at whether or not we were going to do Wii U reviews, because it's got the little tablet-y thing.
That you can technically play as if it were a mobile device, yes.
Yeah, in your own home. But, like, I'm sort of glad we didn't, really, because it's like, there's nothing on it. Like...
Final stuff on Vita. Spelunky's coming in August. That's cool, because...
Stop it, Keith.
Spelunky is cool, Keith. There's nothing funny about Spelunky.
Yeah.
I thought it came out on PC first. It's kind
of a free. It was a freeware release on PC,
and it was really good. So it's a platform 2D side-scrolling roguelike, and I played it, and it's really good. It's quite challenging, as these roguelikes often are, but it's majorly addictive, and you keep trying to, you know, push forward. Or addicting, as the Americans would say, wrongly. But it makes you keep pushing forward and forward and forward, and you really don't want to stop. It's pretty awesome. That'll be coming this month. Luftrausers, which is Live Lamb Beer, the very popular in journalistic circles and frequently copied Lamb Beer. Every game they release gets cloned by someone.
Luftrausers.
It's a 2D flying game in which you blast the crap out of stuff.
This is the first one of their games that actually looks quite interesting to me. Having watched their talk they gave at REST about the development of this, the stages it went through, it actually looks like something
It's really fun. Play. It's really fun to play.
There are other ones I've not enjoyed.
Oh, what about Yeti Hunt? That was good.
I'll play that. I'm talking about the other two. Stupid Great Box and Ridiculous Fishing. I've not liked those.
The other thing, quickly mentioned before we go on to the out and about bit, is that Media Molecules Tearaway, which people have been looking forward to on the Vita for a while, both of those people with a Vita have been looking forward to it, and it was due to come out September, I think it was due to come out. It's been pushed back about a month. It's coming out on November the 22nd now. People were interested because it looks really pretty, papercraft thing from Media Molecule, who are the guys behind Little Big Planet.
Yeah, and it's the main team, apparently, that's been working on it.
Oh, really?
As in, it's not just a, you know, B team or whatever.
Their B team, yeah.
I thought you were about to say it looks really pissy.
No.
I tell you what's interesting, like circling back to Nintendo, is that the fact that Asda have dropped Wii U, when you look at the figures, it's not Wii U's not really selling any worse than Vita, but there's no talk of Vita being dropped. It's interesting. I'm not sure why there's a segregation there.
Maybe they need to keep a better relationship with Sony, because I imagine they flog TVs and Blu-ray players and all that kind of stuff as well.
Well, that and the amount of shelf space that a Wii U takes up.
It's true,
to a Vita.
Yeah. So yeah, you have to wait a little bit to get Tearaway, but it will be turning up eventually. So hold tight! Before we do the out and about section, I'm going to throw you over to Mr. Peter Wellington, who is going to shill shamelessly for Steel Media. Passing it over to you, Peter.
Hi! So very quickly, last week we had a brilliant guide out, and this week we've got a brilliant guide out as well. It is the official companion guide to Doodle Jump.
Doodle Jump?
Yes, because you need a guide for Doodle Jump. Basically, we kind of know that, like, you know, it's left, right, and jump, and maybe shoot some stuff every once in a while. So what the digital publishing team, that's the fancy name for... Joao and his mates did is they put together like a companion, so it's a bit more about the game and how it's created and how the game works, essentially. Like, there's some tips and that sort of thing in it as well, but it's mainly like, if you want to find out absolutely everything about Doodle Jump, and who doesn't, then we've got the guide for you. If that sounds really good to you, and I'm sure it does, then it will cost you 99¢ or 99 pence. And what can 99 pence and 99 cents get you now? A chocolate bar? No. Get off your Nelly. Whatever. That's not a proper chocolate bar. So, whatever. Go and get Doodle Jump, the guide.
And then eat it. About this week, we'll start off with the iOS stuff. The Drowning is out. We've mentioned this in previous podcasts. It got our attention because it's another one of these games that's trying to revolutionize the way in which first-person shooters are played on iOS. So they've come up with an interesting one-hand touch control system in which you stab your fingers on the screen and you shoot in between them and all that. I'm not going to talk too much about it because both Keith and Peter have been playing this. So they're going to fill us all in a little bit later. But you can get it right now. It's free to download, am I right?
Yep.
It is.
It is free to play. So you can get it for yourself right now. And we'll hear a little bit more about it from you guys later. Next up, Nightmare Tower, which is, from what I can gather, a vertically scrolling hack-em-up, slash-em-up thingy.
It was on the Twitter sphere yesterday that it's been cloned.
Oh, really?
Mm. By something called Knight of the Tower or something like that.
Okay.
Well, we allegedly cloned.
caveat, do not sue anybody. Well, we've given it a silver award, said it's really quite good fun. Apparently it's got similarities to Ridiculous Fishing. It's like fast-paced and you use the tilt controls as well to kind of control your player as you're scrolling up the screen. Basic idea, you're a knight and you're in a tower which is filling with lava, and you have to basically keep going up and up and up by tapping the screen and slashing up monsters, bats, dragons, witches, all that kind of stuff. We found it rather jolly. In fact, we described it as brash, glitchy, doesn't last very long, but packs a lot of high-intensity fun into the 2 or 3 hours it will take you to finish it. It is £1.99 or $2.99. It's kind of pretty, a little bit retro, and apparently quite good fun. So there you go. Now, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to try and get the pronunciation right in the very first try.
I think you're going to get it wrong.
This is a game called Rimmed Capsule.
No, you're wrong.
I am not wrong.
It's roomed.
It's roomed, what, not rimmed?
It's roomed capsule. It's not. Not rimmed.
You should be so lucky.
What do you do? You got to defend a spaceship by playing with waves of brightly coloured tiles and shapes, and it will stop aliens and that from coming in and smashing up your ship, what. It's quite minimalist. It reminds me of Edge, that blocky, you know, game, isometric. You're wandering around. It's all kind of neonish colours. Not quite so bright here, so it looks a little bit like that, but with a more defensive strategy streak. We haven't reviewed it yet, but we'll get right on it, I suspect. It'll be £2.49 or $3.99. Apparently it was out on PS Mobile.
Yes, it was, yes.
Yeah, and apparently it was very good. So people are saying if it is as good, then it will be a proper bargain. And you can get it on Android as well. Drop Chords out too. We've talked about this one before as well. This is from Tim Schafer's lot. This is from Double Fine. and is a rhythm music game. Have either of you seen videos for this?
No.
It's one of those ones that's very difficult to explain. You've got a circle in the center of the screen, and you've got dots that appear within that circle. Some of them you're supposed to collect, some of them are red and you're supposed to avoid. What you do is you put one finger either side of the circle, and a line is then drawn between your two fingers or two thumbs. And the idea is you're supposed to collect the little dots that appear by moving your thumb so that you sweep the line through the dots. But you're also supposed to avoid the red ones because they're bad and nasty. It sounds a bit strange, but there's a video up on the site. Go and have a look at it. We weren't convinced by it, however. Mark didn't really take to it. He says it was a bit frustrating, a bit repetitive, didn't feel particularly satisfying to play. I am going to be playing this one because this is coming up on AppSpy this week. So I'll confirm or deny this, or rebuttal.
Is this a Kickstarter?
Don't think so. Originally, I think the problem with this one is that it's been put onto iPad and everything, but really, it's designed for that gesture-based float-in-the-air Kinect-esque controller that senses your fingers.
What, the thing for PC?
Yes.
Leapfrog.
Leap. That's what it's called. Yes, Leap.
Leap.
Yeah, it was originally designed for that. So you're supposed to be able to...
Frog?
I don't know why you added a frog.
I'm sure someone told me it was Leapfrog.
It's just called Leap. But
I think it's called Leap, James.
Yes, I think you might be right there, Keith. So the idea is that using the Leap controller, which is one of these sensor-free floating numbers, you basically just having your fingers out in midair and be wiggling them around doing it. So that might be more fun, but transferring it to the iPad and the touchscreen, apparently not so good.
The only reason I know about that is because I have a friend who will remain nameless who texted me at the weekend and told me he'd been using a certain other part of his body to play Cut the Rope, which I thought was interesting.
Well, like his nose, or
it's a bit like his nose, I suppose. Yeah, right. I don't know him that well. Mm.
You know, don't know what you could possibly be referring to there, Keith.
He's probably smaller than his nose. I don't know.
Was Om Nom sick?
I'm not sure he enjoys it that much.
Did he make that little sad face that he makes?
Did he make that little sound as well, where he goes?
You need a wipe clean screen.
No,
too far. Om no. out on PS Vita this week, Dragon's Crown.
Yeah.
Now, who's played this?
That was also Matthew Dina.
That was in
America.
I was hoping one of you Vita boys would have played this. It is a side-scrolling slash-em-up, much like Golden Axe. If you were an 80s kid, then you might remember Golden Axe. Arcade-style slash-em-up brawler, which is apparently fantastic and has been getting rave reviews all over the interwebs today. The guy who's done the art for it is apparently very well-known. And quite respected. He's done a bunch of other things. But his art style is to draw extremely kind of stylized torsos. So the heads look very small, but the upper bodies look absolutely massive. That's his look. And he does seem to have a bit of a penchant for putting massively muscled ladies with ridiculously proportioned chests into very, very, very tiny little outfits. Which is his style, apparently, but has been rubbing a few people the wrong way online.
Yeah, like me.
Like you, are you...
Because it's if you haven't seen what Dragon's Crown looks like, you might think that we're being a little bit overly sensitive about it.
You can see one image now.
But some of the... Like, it is... I'm not saying this as a feminist, right? Which I am, but as in, I'm not saying it like, anyway, like, I'm not saying this from a feminist perspective, but it is actually grotesque, as in...
Yeah, it's a bit freaky looking. It's not, it's strange. I mean, obviously it's kind of overtly sexualized and stuff, but like that aside, it looks deformed, doesn't it? It's freaky to look at.
The one of the characters is called something like the Amazonian Warrior or something like that, and her legs look like Parma hams. Like they are horrible. Like, so I'm all for like a little bit of sexiness in gaming or whatever where it's appropriate. But it just, you know, it's characters that have it's characters that have breasts that look like they would snap their spines off. And then the muscly men are just as bad. They're just like, they look like the character in Altered Beast, just like he's been upgraded a couple of times just before he turns into an actual animal. Like, yeah. Remember when he had like a tiny head but a gigantic body? He looks like he looks like that. He looks awful.
And it
like,
is a bit. It is a bit weird looking. I agree.
The art though is gorgeous, like the environmental art and the atmospherics and beautiful to look at. It's just.
It's kind of a shame because what everyone else has been saying, and I haven't played it so I can't judge, that it is absolutely brilliant, like genuinely like one of the best of these brawlers anyone's ever played, and kicks the ass out of all the other fantasy type side scrollers that we've had for years. Just a shame about the silly breasts.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Here we are once again, loyal subjects, in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. This week, I'm already sitting on it once again. I'm getting a bit greedy with the throne now. Kind of possessive, if you will. But then, you know, it's my birthright. My bloodline has passed this throne to me, to my royal buttocks. And there they will stay. I've been playing, upon my throne, Tiny Thief, which was the second of the Rovio Stars published games, Rovio's little subset. It's made by Five Ants Games, and it is a kind of a hybrid of a point-and-click adventure, a sort of a is it side-scroller as well, I guess, a puzzle game too. And I'm a bit late to it, but I've just put the review up on AppSpy, and it's really quite good. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. You are a little thief guy, obviously, as the title would imply, and the idea is that you're trying to get to an exit at one side of the level, a doorway that you need to open. Along the way, you're going to have to grab items, you're going to have to steal stuff, obviously. You need some keys to open boxes, or a key will give you access to a cage, and there's an animal inside, and opening that, the animal will fly up, and it'll knock into something, and then something else will fall down and give you another item, and it's kind of that chained effect of gathering different items in order to finally unlock the gate at the end. While you're doing all this, you have to stay out of sight because you've got guards wandering up and down the place, and if you get spotted, then it's game over for you. It's all set in a kind of feudal medieval time, and goes up through a bunch of different environments, starting off in castle courtyard areas, but then moving on to pirate ships, and then you wind up in a kind of magician's basement kind of thing, and then outside you wind up in these kind of dark graveyard looking places with dragons and stuff. First thing, it's massively, massively charismatic. It feels incredibly good-natured, which might sound weird, but, you know, we spend all day, most of us, playing these games or, you know, looking at and reviewing these games where it's all just shooting aliens and shooting aliens and shooting aliens, and that's pretty much all you do. And then if you try and do something cute or whimsical, sometimes it can come off incredibly saccharine and kind of nauseating, or it can come off a bit weird and icky. This really sort of walks the line beautifully. The little characters have been really well drawn. The animations are genuinely funny. You'll knock things onto people's heads and they'll fall over. They pull a couple of excellent expressions with their eyes, you know, the pupils dilating or shrinking, and then falling over. You've got a little companion who is a stoat. Can't work out if it's a ferret or a stoat. I'm going with stoat. He secretes himself around the level, so every level you'll stick his little head up somewhere, like blink blink blink, and then pop his head down, and when he does, you have to tap it and he'll scurry off the edge of the level. As well as just unlocking the gate at the end, you also get to find other items that are lying around, so these are your additional missions that bring you back to the level once you've completed just the straight up story thing.
So how do you control it?
It's tap interface. So what you're doing is this is where it's kind of a mixture of different genres, because to look at it looks like a platformer.
Right.
But you control it by just tapping on the screen where you want the guy to go. Whenever you walk in front of a ladder, a context-based button will pop up, a little arrow pointing up. Click on that and he'll go up. And that works the same for any item within the environment that you want to interact with. It works really very well. It's very neat and clean. And sometimes if you get a lot of context buttons popping up when you've already got a cluttered heads-up display, it can be a mess. But this is completely clean. There's nothing really on it. So when you walk up there, a little arrow pops up to say, do you want to go up? And you're like, boop, yep. And off you go. It's a bit on the short side. There are 30 levels, which I rattled through in a couple of hours without too much hassle. And it's pretty easy. It is I would guess it's maybe aimed at a slightly younger audience. That's not to say that adults can't enjoy it. I really did enjoy it, and I think it's a very, you know, high quality title. But you're not going to get stuck too much on it. There are a couple of little mini games that are involved in it as well. There's one point where you go underwater and there are a whole bunch of fish that are different colors. If you tap them, they change color, and that, you know, leads to unlocking something. But these are kind of things you discover by yourself. It doesn't tell you to do it. You just have to tap it to the environment. You'll suddenly find that certain things react in a certain way. If you tap a picture, it might fall off and reveal something located behind it. You don't know. You have to explore and find it out. So it manages to juggle a few different things and do it very well. Like I say, it's not the most challenging game you'll ever play, but I really do think it is worth picking up, especially now it's available for 69p or 99 cents. Usually it's $1.99, I think, or $3. But even at that price, I'd still recommend it, as long as you don't go in expecting 20 hours of gameplay. But I got a real kick out of playing it, and I think it's two for two, really, with Rovio Stars, because their previous release, Icebreaker, a Viking Voyage, I think it was called, that was good as well.
I'd tell you what's interesting when you look at both games. I've not played either, but we covered Icebreaker in a making of on Biz, and I had a look at Tiny Thief briefly, and they both managed to look like, if you were asked to say, who's this by, it's by Big Name, who's it by, I think you'd automatically almost think Rovio, because they kind of look a bit Rovio-y.
There is something,
even though they're not Rovio. It's like,
yeah, I know what you mean. There is a certain, like, the size of the characters in relation to the environments and a little bit of the graphical look as well, especially when you start going into the menu screens and things like that. It's very obviously Rovio once you get in there. But no, they've done a really good job with it. I shall pass over the throne to you guys, because you have to squeeze in, though, both of you.
Oh, no.
Who's going? You either have to squeeze in side by side, or someone's getting on someone's lap.
Oh, I was going to sit on his knee.
Keith, no.
Hang on.
Where is that hand? Where's that hand going?
That's not your knee, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, I'm going to have to get a new throne.
Oh, right. We're talking about the drowning, aren't we?
You are talking about the drowning. You've both been doing the drowning this week. First of all, why is the drowning of interest to us?
So it's meant to be a revolution in first-person shooter design. I'm doing like a week-long review, basically, and I'm a few hours in. And as I sort of said in my introduction, basically it's trying to do for touchscreens what GoldenEye did for home consoles. Like, it's bringing a genre that hasn't traditionally worked very well on a platform to that platform. And it's been hyped up a lot. And, yeah, one of its project leads is sort of very well-known sort of Twitter person, known for being, you know, slightly bold with his statements.
Is it Ben Cousins?
Ben Cousins, yeah.
Yeah. And he worked for DICE in that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
Yeah, I think so.
That's true.
And he's been working on this for a very long time, and it's been in soft launch for months.
Yeah, for ages, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm not too far into it, so I don't want to give a deliberate judgment either way. So Keith, how have you found it?
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw Ben Cousins demo this at GDC on an iPad. He did a live demo, which is quite a strange thing. Well, it's not strange, but it was a unique thing for people to do. Usually they don't take the risk at things like GDC to demo things. So he must have been pretty confident. And it did look pretty good in that demo. But bear in mind, the person playing it was the person behind it. So, you know, he should have known what he was doing. And so the controls are the be-all and end-all for me, kind of. And the one part that works is movement. So you tap on the screen when you move to, a little white dot kind of appears to show you where you've tapped, and he walks that way. That works, kind of, and I used it a lot to run away most of the time. What doesn't for me is, so you can turn around by kind of either swiping your finger left or right, but to look behind you, tap a kind of button that isn't really there at the bottom, and he does a kind of 180 turn, and then you shoot by two fingers over the target being ended up being the middle bit between your two fingers. Problem is, on an iPod screen, it brings up that old problem of, I can't actually see what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it's also an unnatural movement, because I'm holding it, or I'm putting it on the table, and I've been inclined to just put it on the table, actually. Because if I'm actually holding it, then actually take my hand off and trying to do this with two fingers at the same time as then trying to run away or turn around or whatever. I've been playing for a little over an hour, and it just feels like a mess to me. It isn't intuitive at all. It feels, apart from the walking around, it feels really unnatural. And that is surely the opposite of what they're aiming off. And I don't know whether if you speak to me next week, I'll have changed my mind on that, or if I'm even inclined to play on. Because the other bit that's really dull is the actual things you're shooting at. The whole mission of the game, as I can tell, is these black things appear out of the water. They don't really look like zombies. They look more like aliens, to be honest. And they just kind of... Some of the stages so far I've played, you're attacking, you're trying to kill them all. You're kind of progressively walking around the level. Others, you're defending. So they come, they start attacking you from different directions, trying to break through and get to you, and you basically stand there switching around, shooting. But they're just things. They don't really do anything. They don't react either.
No, like if you shoot them, they just sort of keep stumbling towards you.
Yeah, you seem to have to shoot them a lot of times, actually, sometimes. Even when you know you've hit them directly in the head, you have to carry on. And they, like I said, yeah, they just come towards you. There's no kind of reaction to the way you're playing. And they're kind of overtly stupid in that respect. So just like lambs to the slaughter, or in the end, often is the case, I get slaughtered because they're surrounding me. And that's the other annoying thing, is that I'm finding I'm taking on one of them, and the screen starts flashing red because, unbeknownst to me, there's two behind me, and there's almost no way of knowing that. There's something. I'm playing with the sound on. I don't know whether I should be playing with headphones, and that would tell me that there's one behind me. But that connection of knowing where you are, that you get in FPS, and you know, knowing that there's someone behind you, you got to shoot, seems to be lost. There's just kind of, I'm walking around and suddenly I don't know there's anyone there until the screen's flashing red and I'm almost dead.
But
one
of the things that I've already picked up on is that it's very slick so far. It looks nice in screenshots. Like when it's moving, it doesn't animate brilliantly, but like the fidelity is high, and the story that they're trying to tell, it feels like they're trying to be quite serious with it, or at least gritty. Almost actually does have a little bit of the feel of that Walking Dead kind of that guitar jow, brow, soundscape kind of thing. That's probably not the best way of describing it. Anyway, you meet this girl and she's like, "Oh, come with me and I can help save you," or whatever. But
did you meet a girl? Or did you meet a slightly camp man?
Possibly. So I think it's trying to tell a story in an interesting way. And then, like, as soon as it finishes with telling you, like, the world comes to an end and blah, 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 like, it goes, for the highest scores, collect all these points. And it's like, well, you can either have one or the other, because at some point you're going back to, like, early PlayStation 2 Xbox school of design of still have that throwback need a score ticking up kind of thing, but also trying to be all serious and moody and, you know, tell a story. And you can't actually get away with both, I would argue.
How have you found the controls there?
I think they're okay. I think probably what the most telling aspect is after you've done the tutorial level, the game says, "Now, would you like to continue with these controls, or we can just give you some virtual joysticks?"
Yeah. Oh, that's and right. That's happened during the soft launch, didn't it? That was the first update.
And it's like, you need to either commit to this or don't. Like,
that's the bizarre thing, because Ben Cousins has pitched this as almost being the solution to everyone's FPS problems on touchscreens, and he's a very bullish guy anyway, but he's been very bullish about that. And that's what really surprised me, is I wasn't aware of that they'd backtracked, and you get this screen up that you've just gone through this tutorial that's supposedly meant to be telling you how to do this, and it almost goes, "Yeah, it doesn't really work, does it?" Do you want to try the normal way? And those controls, which I have switched to now just to compare, they're not perfect, but they are a lot better. I'm killing a lot more people.
On the floating joysticks.
Yeah, but it's quite responsive, so they've not done it badly. But it does seem, it was quite sad that they've done that, because it would suggest that they realised that it hasn't really worked.
It feels a bit like the team has made a set of controls that work really well if you've got a lot of experience with them, potentially. And if you're playing it in a really desirable way. So, I mean, like, I'm playing on my iPhone 4S and it runs perfectly fine. It's just that, you know, I think like you, Keith, like the amount of screen real estate I've got is minimal. And, you know, yeah, you're not taking it up with floating joysticks and stuff. But similarly, you know, my fat old fingers, when I'm trying to sweep around the area, I just can't see anything because, I turn around. There was one point where I had my finger on the screen and I turned around and I had my finger still held on the screen and I was covering up the face of a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like
the other thing is it does make it very hard to shoot from a distance because
yeah.
And I don't even mean a long distance, but because it's actually quite finite where you put your fingers and it judges a very tiny little dot as being in the middle. So if you're trying to shoot anyone that's quite, you know, that's head's quite small in between your two fingers, then you're going to miss. So you end up having to walk up to them each time and then kind of back away before they kill you, shoot them and then go away and walk back up to the other one. You can go for the gritty, oh, you're only barely surviving kind of approach, or you can go for the really slick, you know, headshot kind of thing. And this is kind of neither. It's kind of, panicky, messy. And I'm inclined not to play it anymore because it's stressing me out and it doesn't.
It's also like an arena based shooter. Like the levels I've seen so far. And again, like the caveat is I've only seen a couple, but the levels I've seen are just tiny and boring. And like, you know, it's funny. First-person shooters have got really complex. Like we still think of them as left, right, up, down affairs. But really, when you play something like a Killzone or a Halo or a Call of Duty, there's a lot more subtlety to the controls than just aiming. Like I'm really missing the fact that I can't take cover. I'm really missing the fact that I can't dodge out of the way. I'm really missing the fact that I can't melee. You aren't just an avatar walking around aiming at things like Quake. You know, it's not that anymore. Shooters are so much more sophisticated than Serious Sam, and this isn't.
And I'll tell you the other thing that really annoyed me is that I know it's free, and it's on, I know, what's it? John calls
Mabargi.
It Mugabe, and everyone calls it Mobidge or whatever.
Yeah.
It's on that. So you do the tutorial, and you kind of, the whole thing, you know, the opening segment of the game is a little kind of 30-second video, and it's all about putting you in this, you know, oh, you're surrounded by these things, it's all desolate, blah blah blah, and then suddenly the screen goes black and it loads up your Facebook account and says, why don't you invite all your friends, and blah, blah, blah. And you just think, what, wait, this is just feels, you know, it'd be like starting off The Last of Us and then suddenly it's bamboozling you with your latest Twitter feed or something comes up in the middle, like this is completely taken me out of, I'm trying to immerse myself in this thing because I can tell it's also important to the developer that I do. And then suddenly it's lifting me out and wanting to do this, that and the other with me.
I really want to see more. Like I'm and obviously I will have to for the review. Like so that's very fortunate. But I'm not writing it off at the moment, but I do kind of feel like it's a bit it feels like it's been really focus tested. It feels like it's trying to be a lot of things to a lot of people, but in doing so, it's not anything to anybody.
I think the big problem they've got, in a way, is that they've gone free. If I'd invested money in this, I would be more inclined to play on because I'd be thinking, I've paid for this. I want this to get good. The problem is by giving it for free, I have no attachment to it. And if you're going to do that, everyone knows in free games that the money is replaced by time. And people who download free games only give games maybe 20 seconds before they decide whether they can carry on or not. And if you give this game 20 seconds, discounting the opening video, discounting the tutorial, discounting it shoving Mobidge at you or whatever, which takes up a fair chunk of time anyway, the first 20 seconds I had were really poor. And, you know, had I not been thinking I need to play this for this podcast, I would have turned it off straight away and deleted it because it just, I thought, oh, God, this is a mess. What is this? This would be better as a paid game because it changes how people approach games if they've paid out. And I think it would feel like a more rounded experience. Also, if it was paid, it wouldn't have to be attached to the social network gubbins. And it wouldn't shove that in your way.
They're just warming you up for the PS4, that share button, so you can get nice and used to it.
I don't know. I know this is what games do, and they do want you to because, you know, it's the way they spread. But to put it where they have put it, it seems really, really dark.
It feels like do it right at the start. Like,
and it's not even been stylized to fit the drowning. No. It's completely branded with all the blue and yellow colourful, whoa, good, everyone's happy
welcome,
and everything.
Welcome to the fun world of collectible card games.
Yeah,
prepare to drown.
I this feels like it should have been paid, and it feels like this controls, they don't really change anything. Maybe they make things worse.
Well, you should definitely play it, James.
I will. Well, I'm gonna download it and play it, and I'll report back to you next week. But
it's a very nice icon. I'll give it that.
Yeah, very nice.
Well, there you go. That's all I need to know. I'll boot nice logo. It up. Yes, I'll stare at that logo all night. But
logos what count?
Exactly.
10 out of 10. Check my review on pocketgamer.co.uk.
Exactly. Slick. Smooth. Oh, well, that's a bit of a downer to end the episode on, but end it we must. Thanks for sticking with us. Join us next week. We'll follow up on The Drowning, and we'll bring a whole bunch of new news and reviews and all that kind of stuff right into your ear canals where they belong.
It's like they will be drowning in brilliant podcasts.
Oh, now you see. Everyone's very glad they stayed to the end of the episode. So they
Oh, that was a good pun.
Thank you for justifying it, you... All right, awesome. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you all next week. Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.